Stay good, everyone.
Hey Guru,
Thank you.
Welcome to our next episode of our Yogananda podcast. We're going through the autobiography of a yogi, line by line. Today we have full house. Lauren, Priyan, Chris, how are you guys doing?
Oh, really good.
Fantastic.
Nice. Yeah, we're in the middle of winter, except when you're in Brazil, then it's never winter. It's even summer there. I don't even know.
It is, yeah. Peak summertime.
Peak summertime.
Sun is on.
Nice. Cool. It's like the camera can barely take all the sunlight in.
I know, yeah. Yeah. Struggling just as the Irish in me is struggling.
Isn't that coming from Chris?
Yeah, that's your aura.
Yeah. I did my careers today.
That's a lot. That explains it.
Yeah, see. Like, like it's always summer when you do Kriya. All right.
Yes.
Yes. We're in chapter 11. It's two penniless boys in Vrindavan. We started it off last time, and now we're in part two. To give some context, there's a bet going on between Mukunda and his older brother Ananta. That Mukunda could survive in a city that he's not been to before, where he doesn't know anyone, for a whole day without any money, and the Divine Mother would look after him, and he would be able to see the sights, and he'll be fed. And Mukunda drags one of his good friends, Jitendra, into this, who Ananta says might be a fellow victim, but... Yeah, so Jitendra, we're right at this point here where they're about to get going. And Jitendra is doubting a little bit. He's like, how about we take a little bit of money with us to go before we go to Vrindavan, just in case Mukunda's plan doesn't work. So we can phone you and you can come pick us up. And Mukunda is like brushing this aside pretty strongly. Yes, Chris?
I just wonder, you know, if push comes to shove, how many of us would be in the Jitendra camp and how many of us would be in the Mukunda camp? Would we be, you know, enthusiastic about it, but say we want a safeguard? You know, or would we be, you know, fully faithful to the plan? I don't know.
Which one would you fall into?
I'm going to say you would be Mukunda. Priyank. You're a man of faith.
I was going to say I'm the most pragmatic person you'll meet, so I'll be definitely with the Jitendra camp. But I have tried this Mukunda thing before. But which one would you be in?
I don't know. I mean, I've always been a little bit happy-go-lucky to saying it will work out in the end. But whether that's just from a lack of planning or from a or from faith, you could debate that.
This thing about the whole faith and money and pensions and God providing for the devotees every need. This keeps coming up, doesn't it? Because we had Mukunda met a few saints where this happened, and you know, God was essentially taking care of them, and they were saying that. And now he's putting it to test, even at, before starting his job or retirement. He's doing it in a manufactured scenario. He's putting his trust and whole faith in God and gurus.
I think it's a good way to live by. Guruji mentions this often, that we should put our faith in God. But putting it to a test is pretty... I don't think he recommends that anywhere. That's more like something that avatars would do. And that's why... I think we talked about this in the last episode, that I think I was pretty surprised that he would say yes to this bet. Because oftentimes avatars, they say no to this. They feel like they don't have to... to perform miracles for the masses, but here it was granted. And so Jitendra has a relationship to Mukunda not as a disciple, right? They're peers in the ashram where they were at, and they're friends, and I believe they have met not that long ago, maybe a few years ago. So if I was Jitendra, I wouldn't really know if I would have enough faith to say. I mean, Jitendra has seen some things about Mukunda, but so far Mukunda was this person in his life who was also with him in the ashram, who nobody in this ashram really liked, because he was meditating all the time. But I don't think Jitendra has a big reason so far to actually believe that Mukunda would be able to pull this off yet, possibly.
It's a good point, I think, just to be realistic about it and put yourself in Jitendra's shoes. So it isn't something you should just sort of take for granted, that you should know exactly to the extent to which young Mukunda here is attuned with God and with cosmic intelligence. And really, it shows, we touched on it in the last episode, the power of friendship, in a sense, the trust and the faith that he actually has built in a divine friendship that he's building with Mukunda in its early stages. But he, mm-hmm. as we soon find out, goes along with Mukunda. And also, we talked about it before, Mukunda, even as a young individual, was a leader, often would be the at the front of the pack, organizing people, so on and so forth. So it shows the power of maybe influence that young Mukunda here would have at that early stage.
Mm-hmm.
I love that they're going in their simple dhotis, which satisfied Ananta that they weren't doing anything mischievous and carrying, hidden treasure. But this is in contrast to the chapter in my interrupted flight from the Himalayas, where they donned a European fancy, a very fancy European garb. This time, there's no trickery. They're going for a very simple approach and going to see Krishna's abode, as it were. So, and going in, the dhotis are very, as it described in the footnote, it's a very simple attire. All the monks in India, YSS in India, wear dhotis or lungis, which are a similar outfit. Dhoti, I've got a couple of dhotis. It kind of like looks much a bit cooler than the lungi. It kind of wraps around, up and around the back of your leg, so it's quite nice. And it's quite nice also to do yoga in, actually, because because it's loose. Essentially, it's loose fabric draped over you, so there's no getting your joints getting stuck in tight cloth. When you go to yoga classes, they tell you to wear loose clothing. Most people nowadays wear like lycra and spandex or whatever, but especially wear loose clothing where it doesn't touch your skin. Really, it should be loose. Naked would probably be even better.
Naked yoga, that's the next thing. Priyank said it first.
It's not that type of podcast.
They look very comfortable, dhotis. I've never worn one, but I can see they probably don't impair the movement of your limbs. So they're probably good for yoga.
Tell you what they're not good for: going to the bathroom.
Okay.
Cloth and fabric all over the place. Well, there's probably a skilled way of doing it, but I never figured it out.
All right. I would be interested if any listener has anything to say about that.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. For Mukunda, it was very important that Jitendra wouldn't take any money with him. And like you said, Priyanka, dhotis are a way to invoke confidence that they didn't sneak any money. I think my take on this is that it was important for Mukunda to show Ananta that they're honest here, that this is for real. And to show him that he wouldn't cheat. This is not one of his pranks that he used to play when he was younger. This is real. And yeah, so Ananta he sees this, and I don't know if he starts doubting himself, but he suddenly, maybe it hits him that this is serious. And he's really, I think he's gone too far down the rabbit hole to actually say, no, we gotta stop this. But he is getting a bit more humble in his voice when he sees that. And that's, I think, pushing him. Well, there's two takes on this, but this might be pushing him to say something incredible, that if Mukunda succeeds here, he would want to be Mukunda's disciple. He would be so impressed with Mukunda's spirituality and his belief in Divine Mother that he would want to be Mukunda's disciple.
Yeah. He says, if by chance or grace, you pass, which means that chance being there's no such thing as a divine hand, and grace obviously meaning that it's all part of the divine schema. So he doesn't yet, isn't yet decided on which he falls into. But he it's quite a thing, isn't it? He's saying, if you succeed, I will then come your disciple, you can initiate me. Not just because it's, you know, it's not non-conventional, as Mukunda says in the next line, but he says that he's not heartless. So if you succeed, I was going to say, I'm not, you know, the next natural line would be, Mukunda, I'm not heartless. I'll come to Vrindavan, you know, in the evening, and if you're stuck, meet me at this point, and we will then sort everything out. But he says, I'm not heartless. If you succeed, I'll become a Kriya. I'll get Kriya. I'll take Kriya, and I'll have you as my guru. I was just wondering why, how he's got from A to B. It's not a natural thing to follow, is it?
Yeah, it makes no sense. Lauren?
I wonder if Ananta actually had a hidden feeling about his brother and actually wanted in maybe some way to become a disciple, because it takes something to send your little brother off into the wilderness with absolutely nothing and then to say, oh, well, if it's God or if it's just chance, I'll be your disciple. I don't know what he expected to happen, really. Surely he thought, oh, Mukunda will come home. So I don't know. Maybe he knew in some way that he was going to return, and maybe this was his way of getting in with as little blow to his pride as possible. Who knows?
We saw in the opening of the chapter that Mukunda or Yogananda is reflecting to say that Ananta was looking at him for periods of time, kind of plotting, essentially, that there was something coming.
Yeah.
And when I read that, I thought, actually, you know, it's a very affectionate thing. I didn't think, yes, there's mischievousness in there, but when we talked about the banter between the two of them and the communication styles that they were having, it was quite light but serious, and there's a lot of love there. And to me, Ananta has been very much the dictator, let's say, he's been saying to Mukunda that he shouldn't be doing, you know, his pursuits in the divine. Mukunda's now come back saying that he has his guru. He's probably seen a big change in him at this time as well, because he actually has gone out and he's come back and he's had this experience outside of the home. And I took it that he's seeing him in a new light now. That's what popped into my mind, that he's seen him in new light. He's maybe seen the leader that he's becoming, and he's seen him much more affectionately. and he's seeing him that he's not only talked about it his entire life, he's now going out and doing it. So yeah, I think it's a very loving moment there between the two of them that's not dwelled on by Mukunda, is it? He doesn't go in and explain it to us, but we can infer by all the bits and pieces along the way that he's shared with us.
One take would also be on the "I'm not heartless" quote, that the roles in the, we talked about this last time, of an Indian brother is more elevated compared to the West, and there's a lot of respect of the younger brother for the older brother. And maybe this would be a gesture of finally accepting Mukunda's spirituality after ridiculing it for 20 odd years. And maybe he sees that as a big boon in some way. I don't, that would be one interpretation. Yeah. And I think you guys are also right about that he probably is expecting Mukunda to succeed. Otherwise, it would be an incredibly cruel test, right? Leaving him in another city without any money, getting stuck, stranded there. Yeah, and the idea that maybe that was just Ananta's plan to actually become Mukunda's disciple could be. I mean, it's really difficult because you are the older brother and you have so much pride, and asking your younger sibling to become his disciple is probably, if you just asked this outright, you would have to swallow your pride 10 times. So maybe that was his way of doing that.
Yeah. Another interpretation, or what Mukunda may have thought, was that he's just pulling his leg. Because you know, the next line is, you know, it's irregular, and as Mike said, the Indian eldest brother is the one that's most respected, and you know, the juniors usually bow to him and not the other way around. So he doesn't really explain his reflections on this statement by Ananta. Just leaves a little bit of a mystery there. And yeah. Ananta is somewhat of an enigma, isn't it, through the whole book, isn't he? And this is probably the peak enigma moment, if such a thing exists. But on another enigma note, Chris had to just pop away from the call. He'll be back in a little while.
That's right. What would support your second theory, Priyank, would be that if Ananta was really into spirituality, he could have sought out a guru for a long time. He could have chosen the family guru, Lahiri Mahashaya, or he could have said, "Oh, Mukunda, you met Sri Yukteswar. Introduce me to him. He sounds very interesting." But he doesn't have any such interest, apparently. So that could be another, yeah.
But it's pretty, on that point, it's pretty common, well, I found it to be common, for people that have got a bit of an interest in spirituality to not take it much further. Especially even when like really nice moments happen in their lives, they enjoy them. I'm talking about moments of grace. They enjoy the grace and, you know, perhaps offer a prayerful thanks, etc., and then just carry on. Very few people go forward towards a guru, like my brother-in-law recently. I was just telling him something, and I pretty much quoted Yogananda on various things. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh yes, you're well on your way to becoming a guru, you know." And I was like, that's not really my intention. But if he was moved by it, then he would, rather than like as Ananta is doing to Mukunda, just, you know, saying things, he would himself, as Mike, you say, go find Sri Yukteswar, you know, like Mukunda has just said, "I found a Christ-like master." Ananta could have said, "Oh, who is that?" whilst you're in Vrindavan, maybe I'll go on my own little journey. So I think Well, you probably deduced that he's not expecting him to pass this ordeal. So mm-hmm. he's not expecting to have to go through with this, I don't think.
Yeah. If we don't want to spoil the story here, we can talk about it at the end of the chapter, what that means for Ananta. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So Guruji has no time to actually reply to this. Because the train's leaving, they have to run. So that's the last words that Ananta leaves them with, that he's, if he loses the bet, he's going to be his disciple. In real terms, it's a win-win for Ananta, isn't it? He can't really lose it, or it would actually be better if Mukunda succeeded.
But he loses all his former perspective on the world and Mukunda.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's quite a loss.
Mm, yeah. But maybe it's time to lose that.
Yeah. But you kind of, when you invest your whole life into one way of being, and then you like later on, Jitendra, for example, he's going to burst into tears, right? Because he'd invested so much into being Doubting Thomas, and you know, and then he realized that he was wrong, essentially.
Yeah.
And then he burst into tears, and we're going to obviously talk about that, but that's the kind of vibe I'm getting.
Jitendra is also an interesting character, yes. we also need to talk about him. Yeah, so now they're on this train, and it doesn't take long. So I guess they left without breakfast. They just went really early on this train. And I think what's happening is that Jitendra is getting hungry. Jitendra is thinking about what is this day going to be like.
One quick second conjecture. So if there was time, Mukunda said he didn't have time for comment. If there was time, what do you think he would have said to Ananta?
True.
Do you think he would have been like, yes, my disciple, I've been waiting centuries for you. I placed you in my family nest just so we could have this moment. What do you think he would have said? Which is probably what I think more likely. So he would have said, Sri Yukteswar is just round the corner, just, you know, 5-hour train journey. I highly recommend you go in that direction. Or you may have even said, go to the Ananda's ashram. You'll fit in well.
Wow. Yeah. He's safe by the bell, I guess. That would have been a bit of an awkward thing. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they would have just carried on with the banter. I think that's the most likely thing. Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. I haven't thought about that. But yeah, like, life is the way it is sometimes for a reason, just to save you from those kind of moments, I guess. Yeah, and Jitendra, he's like in the train, and I think his thoughts are now, what are we going to do? He doesn't seem very convinced that Mukunda is going to be winning this bet. He thinks they're just going to end up in Brindaban, and he's just the victim of a fight between two brothers. But on the other hand, I guess he went along with it because he is spiritually inclined, and he's also Mukunda's friend. So those are what I would say are the reasons why he's going. Because if I was in the situation, I would have said, guys, I'm out.
I'll watch from the sidelines.
I'll watch from the sidelines. Or, I mean, there's no reason for Jitendra to not have any money, right? It was he could have just watched Mukunda, but it was better like that, and it showed some faith in Jitendra as well, to be fair. So we can't deny that.
I feel like Jitendra has this real childlike quality. You're like, you can just imagine he's really sulking on the train, you know, the lugubrious silence as it covers the miles. You can just imagine miles and miles of just Tutunda sulking on the train. And then finally, when he does speak, he pinches Mukunda and is like, you know, I see no sign that God's going to supply our next meal. Like, that must have been building up for a long time.
Yes.
But it must have been also very strange for him. Like, imagine being in that moment, being Jitendra, thinking, oh my gosh, what have I got myself into? But, you know, when you're with Guruji, you can't ever fail.
Do you think he incurred much karma for pinching an avatar painfully on a tender spot? I was just thinking what tender spots he could be referring to. Because in India, I think I mentioned, in school and stuff, teachers would do this as well. Like, they know exactly where, like, there's no damage will happen, but it'll really hurt. So I was just wondering which spot he could be referring to. Like, cheek? Could it be like on the side of the stomach? Where it can it can cause a bit of anguish. Wondering where.
I was thinking somewhere on his upper arm here.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's the same. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but Mukunda is very positive. Seems very happy with the plan. Jitendra is a bit depressed. Mukunda calls him Doubting Thomas. Which is a reference from the Bible. He'll use that again later. So there's a short reading I saw in the Second Coming about this we're going to do later. But Mukunda sticks with it. He tells him to cheer up, and actually there's something to look forward to, because the city of Vrindavan is actually a very special city in Indian history. It is the place where Krishna grew up or spent a big part of his childhood by the holy Yamuna River. And it's, I think it has a large Krishna shrine there as well, where you could, that they would have visited. So it's quite a place to behold. So Mukunda is actually very positive and looking forward to all of those things, and he has zero fear of not having any food or getting stranded in Vrindavan. And then as things happen, of course, there's other moments where Guruji says he's praying to Divine Mother for something to happen. But in this case, he's very relaxed, Mukunda. He's very sure of himself that things will happen without him having to do much. I wonder why that is. But they're on this train, and then there is a person coming into their compartment, and he looks at them, and without knowing anything, he's like, do you know anyone in Vrindavan? And Guruji is, I don't exactly understand why, but Guruji is like, that's none of your business. And he's really not trying to tell that person. I think it's part of the bet that they cannot reveal their predicament. But it's Guruji is not even trying to talk to this person and telling them, oh, could you show us around in Vrindavan, or could you spare some coins? Or because I think begging is also not allowed, because I think that's how the whole thing started, because Guruji said Divine Mother would have other ways for me to get fed beyond the begging bowl, right? So he wouldn't go there. And he would just act like he's very confident and he doesn't need anything. Before I continue, Priyank.
Yeah, or just something. This kept happening to me when I was in India recently, but it was often it was because people wanted to be like a guide, or they wanted to take you, you know, in their car, or you know, they wanted to be your chauffeur or whatever. So this could have been the case that Mukunda thought that, you know, this because you just get approached so many times by all these various propositions, whether it's food, or as I say, tour guide, or you know, hotel to stay in for the night, all these kind of things. That's maybe what he would have thought.
Right. Okay. So not something where the stranger would have been genuinely trying to give Mukunda something, but it's more like trying to sell him a product at the end of the day.
Mm. Maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Mukunda goes like, "No, sir, let us alone. And we are not running away from home. So you're wrong." So they're basically brushing them off. And as they reach Vrindavan, and they get off the train, and then the stranger comes again and just locks arms with them and takes them with them, which I find interesting. I don't know what I would do, but I think this man must have been very convincing. Yes, Brent?
Yeah, a couple of things. So in amidst that, the two men say that you're probably going, you know, running away from your families to go to the Stealer of Hearts under the enchantment, the Stealer of Hearts, and then in the footnote that is just defined as Hari, which is an endearing name for Sri Krishna by his devotees. And you know, you mentioned earlier that Vrindavan is a very important place for devotees of Krishna, which it is. It's a stone's throw away from Mathura, which is his birthplace, and you know, Gokul and Govardhan Hill, and all these places are all nearby. So these are all exceptionally holy places, and there's lots of temples, very intricately historical temples in Vrindavan, and there's even like a small Tulsi leaf forest where they say that Krishna used to have his Ras Leela with the gopis there. So one of the temples is you just walk around that little forest bare feet and absorb some of those vibrations from hopefully that Leela. So there's that. But it's right now there's another interesting thing that happens in Vrindavan and Kashi actually as well, is that when people wanted to leave their family life and do it their whole life to God, they would go to Vrindavan or Kashi. And Vrindavan, because obviously the devotion of Krishna, and it's also he's such a stealer of hearts that it's called the City of Widows. So essentially when husbands pass away, widows, rather than carrying on, some of them decide to then take that opportunity to take a sort of renunciation, and they move to Vrindavan, and there's little communities in Vrindavan and Kashi essentially for widows, and they just devote their whole lives to that endeavor, and hence one of the nicknames is City of Widows. He's a steer of hearts to more than one community.
Nice. Yeah, I'm sure you've been to Vrindavan once, Priyank, or
yeah, just came, yeah, a couple of times, yeah. Okay. just was there a few weeks ago.
No. I went in 2007, like really long ago. I'm trying to remember. I think we did a day trip from Delhi, and we went to one temple there. And then, yeah, Another thing I remember, the devotee in Delhi, they told us to, we have to eat those desserts. They're those little cookies, those really sweet cookies. They were really good. So we got like a whole box of them at home. And for the rest of our India journey, we were eating those. They were pretty good.
Nice.
Yes. Another one. So once they arrived in Vrindavan, like I said, they were those strangers. They took them with them to their own place, which must have been some kind of very nice, it says stately hermitage, which is like something that is completely unexpected. Like Guruji could, they could have, like Divine Mother could have manifested a little tiny thing for them, but she manifested them to go to almost like a palace and be treated like kings. Yeah, Priya?
Yeah, initially one of the men said that we're going to give you food and shelter. And this is obviously not just shelter, this is palace, as you mentioned. But it's interesting that Mukunda, even at that point, said no. because he's playing a very tough game, isn't he?
Yeah,
because they needed both of those things. At that point, you could argue he may not just be a salesman, but then he could be, because shelter would mean a hotel, so that thought could also have been going through his mind. But I'm just wondering what other reason there could be for his stubbornness and not being swayed by all their conversation, these guys being essentially really nice. He's just not even entertaining them, is he? Just wondering what other reasons he could have for that. Could it also be that he's making the test, he's really pushing the envelope of the test.
So yeah.
he's not just saying yes to all propositions. He's making, he's really working on Jitendra.
Yes, exactly.
Because Jitendra is like, yes, I want shelter. Yes, I want food. Mukunda is like, no, you will have neither. You'll have it when God gives it to us. Not
on our terms.
Yeah. Well, not when these two people give it to us.
I think you're right that you could say that those are strangers coming up and they could suspect that they're salespeople. I think one reason why they went along eventually is because they said you seem like devotees of Lord Krishna. Mm. And that was his motive. So that was a motive that was acceptable to Mukunda. Maybe the stranger shouldn't have said, "You look like you're truants from home," because that would have revealed his situation, which is he's not allowed to. Maybe that's also a reason why he declined initially.
You mentioned earlier that you raised your eyebrows at the fact that they linked their arms and just basically. Almost, it sounds almost like kidnapping, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
But how can I say this? There's a lot of trust that's there in Indian culture that isn't there in the West. Everything from leaving your car key with a randomer, leaving your house open. Inviting a complete stranger into your house, all these kind of things. So there's a lot of how do you say this? From the Western perspective, it looks pretty insane. And right now, it may be slightly worse. And you hear stories of kidnappings and things like that right now, but this was 100 years ago, and. Back then, I'm imagining it would have been an even better case than it is now in terms of the state of like the people and crime rates and stuff like that. So I'm imagining, well, whenever I go to India, I don't see, I'm not one to just stay on the safe tourist trails, as you can imagine. I don't see crime really. We were there for 6 weeks just now, and you know, there were so many instances where we could have been not necessarily like mugged or anything, but someone could have ripped us off, or like someone could have forced us into this or that situation. But it never ever transpired. There's so much trust there between everyone. It's difficult to describe. But so what I'm essentially saying is Mukunda would not have been worried that
to get kidnapped.
Yeah, that he's getting kidnapped. It would have just been like, oh, these guys won't leave us alone. They're just, you know, let's accept their hospitality kind of thing, as opposed to what's gonna happen to us as you would read it in the West, right?
They're dressed in dhotis, so they probably don't look like someone you should kidnap and get a lot of money for. But maybe their attire also makes them look like devotees. That could also have played a role. Yeah. So the stranger that we don't really learn his name, but he's very happily dropping them off at this stately parlor mansion, and there's a lady called Gauri Ma, and he leaves them with her and then takes off. So I wonder if this was also benefiting him, not just doing a good deed, but also he was probably supposed to come back with those guests and they weren't showing up, and so he was looking for a replacement. So maybe if you are in his shoes, maybe it makes sense that he was looking for someone. Or maybe he did it as real charity. He thought, oh, there's all this food and we should bring in someone. Either way, it kind of really, really worked out for them. He says the sentence, he says, "We shall meet again if God willing." I don't know if that's just the classic Indian goodbye, or if that there's some meaning in there. But now, Mukunda and Chitendra, they are at this place, and this place, I don't really know what form of royalty would have been there at this point. But it looks like some kind of, like, it was 100 years ago. So I guess in that time, there were still Maharajas and the like. So it might have been something like that going on there. Definitely, there was a wealthy place where they ended up in. And they had this really lovely lady, Gauri Ma, who now said, "I'm going to take care of you." So they were from the situation in the train where they didn't know how to see the city, how to get breakfast or lunch, to this place where they are now in this palace, and they have this lovely lady taking care of them and preparing food for them. So this is the first miracle has already happened without much fuss about it, without anything. It just happened right away. Even before they arrived in Vrindavan, it was already happening for them. And Chitendra, like Priyank mentioned earlier, for him, this was completely unbelievable. He saw this and was starting to burst out in tears, because this blew his mind. This blew the top off everything for him. And I found this a bit of an extreme reaction, but maybe it shows that he had some faith, but he didn't really believe that this would happen. And seeing this happen like that kind of was really unbelievable to him. And it was really difficult to put it into words, I guess. So it, just the emotion had to come out. And yeah. And then they had the most amazing meal there. And this amazing lady serving them. And Guruji couldn't stop but himself but saying, "See, Doubting Thomas, the Lord works and in a hurry too." Yes, mm-hmm. Priyank?
So Mukunda is obviously, he's not very sympathetic to Jitendra's outburst of tears. But it seems like quite a moving moment, doesn't it, for Jitendra? I know a lot of people, when they go to places of worship, they do mm-hmm. break down in tears and stuff. Obviously, then they're not mm-hmm. in a place of worship here. But when you sometimes you reflect on how much grace you've been afforded, and then it can emotionally obviously get too much. And this is obviously what has happened to Jitendra. But I see this at the center as well sometimes. And people in tears because of just, you know, the Guruji's writing just makes you realize how much God is in your life and how much mm-hmm. beauty there is in the world and all that kind of stuff that it can break down even the most staunchest and sternest of egos.
So Mukunda attributes all of this to Divine Mother. But if you would have been Jitendra, would you not have turned around to Mukunda and start seeing at least some extent the great man he is, who when you spend time with him, then God is on your side? Mm. There's no such gesture here, but I was wondering about that, how Jitendra was feeling towards Mukunda. Maybe it was also just a bit uncanny to him that he was like, "What's this Mukunda is for real," and he didn't really know how to handle this. Yeah, Priya.
It's difficult to see someone who's pretty much your peer mm-hmm. to see them at such an elevated state, even though like you have lots of evidence. you have evidence that he's operating on a much higher plane, but he's still the same age. He's still just come from the same ashram. He's still the same guy you knew from school. So I think that could be part of it. And, you know, it's going to go on. His doubting doesn't end here, does it? It keeps going even after this outpouring of emotion. So it seems he would have pulled himself together and resumed his role in this drama.
That's right. That's what it really is, his role in this drama, right? Mm. So, yeah, like I said, Guruji calls him Doubting Thomas because he didn't believe earlier. And the saying Doubting Thomas, I think it's a bit old-fashioned and I don't see many people using this anymore, but it's a saying from the Bible. And Guruji mentions this in the Second Coming of Christ, and we could read a short section from there. Priyank, do you want to start?
Sure. The disciple Thomas was not present on the first occasion of Jesus' appearance to the assembled disciples. He was unwilling to acknowledge Jesus' resurrection without the proof of personal experience. When he had the opportunity 8 days later, the master declared to him, "Thomas, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen and yet have believed." Though Doubting Thomas has since become a proverbial aspersion, it should be noted that on other occasions, Jesus extolled the high state of consciousness that Thomas had attained Followers of all spiritual paths ought to appreciate the fact that doubt, constructively applied, is what keeps true religion free of the superstition of dogma and the fanaticism of blind belief.
Religion should be treated as a science. It is right that it be subjected to the test of experience. For millenniums in India, the rishis, as spiritual scientists, employed reason, observation, and systematic investigation to arrive at definite and replicable proof of divine truths. When religion is approached scientifically, belief matures into realization, a direct knowing by soul intuition that bestows the blessed certitude of unshakable faith, even upon they that have not seen, independent of the physical senses.
Thank you, guys. I think this is really beautiful what Guruji does here. Because when you follow Christian tradition, then doubt is usually seen as something very negative and a doubting person. And to be fair, Yogananda says the same thing, right? When you really want to make spiritual progress, then doubt is really not helpful. But he does say it has a role. It has a role to keep things real, keep things honest. And that Jitendra here is just doing something that is very natural. He is asking questions that anyone would ask who would be in this situation. So just to look at him and say, oh, he's so doubtful, so this is really bad, that's probably not the right approach. I find it also interesting that he mentions Thomas, because the apostle Thomas was later the one who went to the south of India and started Christianity there in Kerala. So yeah, just to mention that as well. Yeah, so they are eating away at this place now, and then the hostess is coming with a device. It's called a punka, and I don't really know what this looks like, but she uses it to fan Mukunda and Jitendra. And I mean, how much better can it get? You're getting this amazing meal, and then the hostess comes and fans you with probably like a giant fan or something like this. Have you seen this before, Priyank?
Yeah, it's essentially on a long handle. There's like a very open, sometimes it's quite intricately designed, like a flat sheet that rotates freely. So then obviously you can fan quite easily. And other times it's made with feathers, peacock feathers, which is really nicely designed. Other times it's made of like this fluffy material that's on the end of like this golden rod, which you'll often see in Indian temples where the priest is fanning the deities. So it's not something that you would do to a boy that you just to a couple of boys that you just met, especially not from an elderly lady. But the adage in India, you know, a guest is like God. So that is it's a time honored ritual to treat guests as if God has arrived in your doorstep, and you can worship God through the service to those guests. So that there's that element. So this is probably what she was practicing. Aditi Devo Bhava, I think, is a Sanskrit saying. The other time where Bunka is used in the autobiography, you'll remember, is it Ramu, I believe, Lahiri Mahashaya's disciple, blind disciple, was fanning him. Mm-hmm. Come with complete devotion, and then there's a whole story of him being cured miraculously of his blindness, which comes later on, but there's that other reference, I think, in the autobiography of that same sort of banning.
I was amazed by how well they got treated, and Guruji mentions they had 30 courses of different delicacies that are out of season and everything, so really amazing. And that reminded me that when I was in India, I was staying with a devotee in Delhi, and he was really nice to us, and I was always thanking them, and he was like, don't thank me, thank the guru. I treat you like the guru was my guest because you're devotees of Yogananda. And I feel maybe a similar sentiment was going on here, that they were devotees of Lord Krishna, and that's why they would treat the guests like it was Lord Krishna himself being the guest. A similar beautiful sentiment, I imagine, could have been going on here. And yeah, Mukunda goes on explaining how wonderful the meal is, and how him and Jitendra are really having a royal experience here that is came out of nowhere. And then when they left, like, I don't know about you, but if that would have happened to me and someone is so nice to me, I would have thought maybe at the end they asked something of me, or right, or maybe it at the end there will be some kind of prize. But instead they just said their farewell at the end, and they even invited them back to say, come back anytime. So that is just unbelievable, also to myself, to be honest. So it's not the kind of experience you see every day. So I can see how Jitendra is moved by this, how he feels this is not normal. This is definitely something where Divine Mother must have played a hand in. Yeah. So this is as far as our second part of chapter 11 is. Stay tuned for the third part. Does anyone want to add anything? So.
Oh, just one other thing.
Oh yeah.
Did we mention that Mukunda got his own back on that?
No.
On that tender spot.
That's right.
Picking the appropriate spot. So when Gauri Ma was going into the kitchen getting all the things, Mukunda took the opportunity to return the favor, or relinquishing him of the karma.
Yes, I was going to say that. Yes,
nice.
You're going to mention the karma of pinching an avatar.
Guru, but then if that's the case, then he would have had to pinch him so hard that it would have been bruised, because it can't possibly be equate the two. But one other thing I wanted to state was this 30 course meal.
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard of the North Indian thali, mm-hmm. and the more elaborate a place you go to, the more little a thali is a dish. Mm-hmm. So in India, if you order a thali, then what it means is you'll order at least 10 different items on the dish. So it's like when you go to very fancy restaurants in the UK, they seem to have adopted this this idea of lots of small courses. It may come from there, I don't know. But in India you have this thali, and the nicer the establishment is, the more small delicacies will be had. It's quite difficult to decide which what to have and when, and what to have which with what, you know, which item with what. Even for me, that's, you know, has most of that food. I think my palate isn't that refined to, like, I usually just mix everything, if I'm honest. but people who do have a very refined palate know when to have this and when to have the sour thing, when to have the spicy thing and the bland thing and all that kind of stuff. But I must say, and surely you three will agree with me, is there a finer cuisine than the Indian cuisine?
No.
I love Indian cuisine. I would put it number one. Yeah.
Difficult.
For me, it is.
Difficult yeah. to challenge.
It's probably one of the better memories that I have of living in London was the exquisite Indian cuisine. Just you can, if you want it any day of the week, you can go out and get it. Or if you're skilled enough, you can obviously make it at home, but me not being so. London's a great place.
How's the Indian food in Brazil, Chris?
I know one place in Belo Horizonte, a city of 2 million people, where there's good Indian food, but I think it's coming into its own here a little bit. It's less culturally sort of people enjoy their rice and beans and they're quite stable, but it's not so much a touristy city where I live, where it's more multicultural and things like this. So. But yeah, food here is fantastic. Very fresh fruit and veg all day long. So it's vegetarians brew as well.
Maybe we'll get to experience that later this year, Chris.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe. The other thing I wanted to quickly mention was the funny line Mukunda said in here, where he said, what your royal patrons could have found more urgent than attending this banquet, I cannot imagine. Even though I've read this so many times, I always laugh at that beautifully delivered and punchy line. And then the next line is somewhat significant. He says, silenced as we were by Ananta's requirement, we could not explain to the gracious lady that our thanks held double significance. Sincerity was at least patent. And then they departed with her blessings. Blessings, so she would they would have probably have touched they probably would have touched her feet, as is the Indian custom, and then she would have granted them the blessing, which is again what an elderly member of your family or an elderly person in society can bestow on you. After that, which is another reason why the whole Mukunda and Ananta, you know, where he said it was not ordinary, essentially, a elder brother bowing before a junior, a younger brother. But just another quick reminder: silence as we were by Ananta's requirement, which means that obviously that he couldn't, they couldn't tell her what it actually meant. Because she would have really enjoyed that, no doubt. It's such a shame. That would have further increased her devotion and faith.
Yeah, I know I missed a good chunk of this episode and this part. I had to jump off. But just 2 cents for me on this part of this chapter. It's such a beautiful example of how not to get too caught up in knowing everything. That Jitendra's coming in, why is he worried? Because he thinks he knows how it's going to end up. He thinks he's going to know it's going to end up in catastrophe. And I love the part where, you know, the Lord works in a hurry too, where Guruji essentially had such faith that he was able to jump into this, knowing that God could make anything happen at any time. It's just such a great lesson, isn't it? That we can get so worked up, the ego, the little self can get so worked up over sort of the ins and outs of everyday life and stresses and strains, and could get itself worked up in a knot. But Guruji is acting as that example of the higher self versus Chitendra as the little self. So yeah, even though I wasn't here with you guys for the majority of this part of the podcast, I really love this part of the book.
Indeed. One other quick note. Jatinda from the mind-interrupted flight toward the Himalayas. His name was Jatinder, and in this section, his name is Jatindra. So Jatinder different and guy. Jitendra. So we think, I imagine it's a different boy. Because that other Jatinder, he was also a bit of a doubting Thomas, and then ended up being ended up being a bit of a traitor, didn't he?
Yes.
Whereas Jatinder is just doubting Thomas, but he hasn't become a traitor. In fact, he's a bit more of a devotee, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and life goes on. The life of devotee goes on. He attracts more and more other devotees into his life. I would say Jitendra seems a lot more spiritually inclined than his friends from earlier in the book. So definitely true. All right. So I think now we're at this point where we can end it here and thank our listeners and the people who watch it on YouTube, and to stay tuned for the third part. How will their journey continue in Vrindavan? Jai Guru, everybody.